many protesters continuing across the country seeking justice and police reform.
Hey, look, 400 years we've been fighting for this. Living just to fight, we just fighting to live. It's like we fighting for our rights and a right to exist. Imagine how the world look through the life of a kid. You don't know what we've been through. Figure cause we black, then you know what we into. Trayvon could've been you, Rihanna could've been me. Yeah, I'm just staying fast. Crazy how we say we love you, but you can't say it back. Prayers feel different when your mama help you make it back. Get them pulled over by the cops, seeing how they react. How you hold race against us knowing God gave us that? I'm not trying to change the world, I'm just trying to change the act. I just wanna feel it. Everybody treated the same, but I'm a realist. I can see how far we done came. We don't deserve that. See this life, we taking it back. You don't know what it's like to be black. Can you blame us? We've been fighting for a cause and it still make us die for respect. Can you blame us? Trying to take a knee for something and they still got their knees on our neck. We just trying to breathe.
Right, everybody across the diaspora, welcome to Africa 500. Y'all know how we do it, how we bring it. Of course, there's by Brooklyn Queen. We send that out to one of our mothers who was brutally killed, shot through the door, AJ Owens, Florida mom, savagely taken from us. We remember the first time I remember an account like this was Renisha McBride. We was involved in a protest for Tamir Rice, and that happened. She also was trying to get help, shot through a door. Anytime your women are being killed, murdered, it is important for a group to bring attention to this and to stop everything. So that goes out to our mother, AJ Owens, that we just recently lost. And we will not tolerate these killings. We will not continue to allow these to happen. It is unacceptable. It reminds us of the film that was released, We Are the Brutes, by a Haitian filmmaker. We talked about this last year. It talks about the history of the Western world and the brutality they have sprung upon the world. And we see that this is one of the Europeans' cultural characteristics, and it continues. You can read about this, Iceman Inheritance. It's a book that talks about their cultural characteristics. Also, by Marima Ani, Dr. Ani talks about Urugu. You know, so it's important that we realize as Africans who we are and who they are. So, folks, today's show is going to be powerful. Really excited. We got some powerhouses. We're just going to burn the walls down, of course, diaspora. And today we're talking about after reparations, economic models for nation building. Okay, today is Wednesday, 14th June, and we're talking again about after reparations, economic models. Today's guest, we have Dr. Andrea Thomas. She's with us, and she's going to be bringing all of herself into the room. And we have Dr. Robert Weems. He's going to be bringing all of himself into the room. And also we have Ambassador Reverend Kwame Kamau. I first heard these folks about a month ago. They were talking about their work and body work, and I just thought it was just amazing. I was fascinated. So, of course, the diaspora, we're always trying to bring you relevant, pushing you forward information. So these folks are going to be with us. Just let me do just a check-in. I guess, are you with us? Dr. Thomas, are you with us today?
Yes, I'm here. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Beautiful. And what about Dr. Robert Weems? Are you with us today?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. And y'all are present. I can hear in y'all voice. Y'all ready. I love it. Folks, we're going to go ahead and begin. I just want to say it was just such an honor for Africa 500 to have y'all with us. I wanted to start a little bit. I wanted our audience just to hear just the type of work that you do and the way you approach the economics, the landscapes, because our folks don't talk enough about that, and it goes into the future. So we're going to start with Dr. Andrea Thomas, going to hear a little bit from her. And then we're going to hear from Dr. Robert Weems, his very, very important work on the history of black insurance companies, which I had no idea, just the legacy of that. And then we're going to bring everyone together just for a roundtable discussion. Dr. Andrea Thomas, welcome to the show. We're delighted to have you. I wanted to ask you just what kind of brought you the work you do. You work across the world. You're international. You look at economies. Can you tell us just a little bit just how that ties in when you think about this topic of reparations? Go ahead, Dr. Thomas.
Thanks so much. And also, as luck would have it, construction just started on my neighbor's apartment, so I apologize if there's any background noise.
No, you're good.
Okay, great. You know, when I was younger, I grew up here in the United States, and I always had this fascination with the world, and I had the chance to study abroad, and that really came from the beautiful gift of memoirs that my great-grandfather wrote about his 30 years living in Central America. So many people don't know that the Atlantic coast of Central America and even South America is actually of African descent, meaning brown skin, brothers and sisters who, for many reasons, you know, lived in these areas. And so I get to examine cultural evolution in Limon, Costa Rica, where my grandmother grew up. And from there, I knew I wanted to continue to be international and had the beautiful gift of working with international development agencies on the world stage and being in different field locations. So in Central Asia and Southern Africa and South America and in the Middle East and even in Eastern Europe. And one of the elements that I got to witness was that there is substantial investment coming from different nations into these developing worlds, these developing economies. And what I felt was in my heart when I was younger, that was a pivot, was I had this desire to go travel the world and help people. And then as I was traveling the world and helping people, I realized, okay, cool, like, where is the money in our communities? Where is the money, you know, going? Who, if I've been fortunate enough to have been gifted these international experiences to go and be all around the world, then I certainly need to come back here and work in my own communities and under, you know, help people understand that the world is a much bigger place than we talk about it in the U.S. context. What I also observed was that as a nation here, especially when we're talking about the global economy and the digital economy and, you know, competitive eligibility even for us in terms of entrepreneurship and also job eligibility, workforce preparedness, I noticed there was a lag, right? We're not talking about the world stage and the digital stage to the degree in our educational systems, the way that is being discussed, say, for example, in a nation like Kazakhstan. And there is this attitude, it's like, of course, Kazakhstan wants to know about what's happening here in the United States. But the person who's too comfortable is the one who actually ends up falling behind, right? There is a level of arrogance that comes in. You don't actually sharpen your cutting edge when you continue to thrive in this way of being. And gone are the days of our industry here where we actually used to build and make things, right? It's a very different system in the world stage where now we're talking about entrepreneurship. I mean, you have unicorn entrepreneurial endeavors that leverage nothing and make it into this multi-billion dollar industry. So for example,
Dr. Andrea, I'm gonna pause you. Brother, you got me smiling. You was putting down some heavy stuff. I am loving this. Oh my goodness. I'm Dashy, I know how I get. I'm like this sister now. This is Sister Andrea. You are putting down real talk, real information. And you said so much. So we're gonna pause you. You said so much information. I wanted to bring in Dr. Williams since I got y'all on together, right? Because when I talked to him, y'all talking similar. When you're talking about entrepreneurship, you're talking about substantial investment, how we see the world, we being comfortable, we not seeing it. And you are giving us the gift this morning to see through your world, through your lens, which I love.
Thank you.
So I'm sorry, I just got excited. Just like, woo! I know you can't repeat everything you just said, but thank goodness we have this on audio. Dr. Williams, are you there? Can you come in? Intro yourself. I'm gonna bring y'all together. What brought you to your work? You speak in a similar language to Dr. Thomas. Talk to us. Introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah, my name is Dr. Robert Weems. I'm a was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, and there's a relevance where I was born in that, you know, I'm a historian. Mm. And when it was time for me to work on my PhD dissertation, I knew that I wanted to do something on the history of African Americans in Chicago. Mm. And it, for me, it came down to doing something on the political development or the economic development. And literally, in one of the best decisions I've made in my life, I chose to go into looking at the business development and entrepreneurship in Black Chicago. My dissertation and first book was on the history of an African-American insurance company in Chicago. And in doing that research, I wasn't really sort of a business-oriented person before I undertook this research. But shortly after doing this research, it became very clear to me why Black insurance companies played such a prominent role in our history in terms of capital formation. And that's the fact that, unlike other businesses, insurance companies regularly run surplus. And when we look at African-American insurance companies, unlike, say, many mainstream insurance companies who use their surpluses to invest in government bonds and the like, and Black companies invested in government bonds as well, but they made a point of reinvesting their money back into the African-American community. And in this particular company that I did my dissertation on and first book, I saw a variety of ways in which this company was able, in fact, to reinvest in African-American communities. And it's very interesting, too, that when we talk about Black insurance companies, we're literally talking about the cornerstone of Black business development in this country. One of the things I found in my research was that, for instance, during the Great Depression, we know that the Black banking industry in this country was pretty much decimated. We really didn't see a reemergence of significant Black banking activity until the 1960s. However, we saw Black insurance companies able to, in fact, survive the Great Depression. But as I've noted in my various work, because one of my research focuses is on the impact of racial desegregation on historic Black business.
Dr. Wings, I wanted to point in a little bit. I think it's interesting hearing both of you speak, you and Dr. Thomas. She's talking about the international level, the aspect. Your research is very much grounded, which I think is fascinating, in the African-American landscape and insurance. And you both are speaking about entrepreneurship, you're talking about banking, and you're talking about investment. I wanted to tie you in. Back to you, Dr. Thomas. When you talk about entrepreneurship and your international travels and what you see in regards to, you started going to it with the African-American community, communities of African descent. What is it that your analysis is? Where we are not intersecting or we are intersecting? Dr. Thomas.
I think the really important takeaways from my experiences and observing what's happening, you know, here in the diaspora is there is a real need to focus on being eligible and active as a participant in the global digital economy. So, for example, a lot of times when we talk about community and economic development, we talk about buying up the neighborhood and restoring infrastructure that has been broken and dismantled in local communities, and how we come together for collective work and responsibility to help uplift communities. And that idea is still true. However, there is a world stage, you know, talking about, we often frame it in the context of futures and what it's going to be like in the future, but it's actually now, and it was accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. And so there's something called the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which in and of itself has been, you know, coined by the World Economic Forum, which some individuals might look at and have a resistance to, but it doesn't mean that even if there is a emotional resistance to it, that it isn't still a fact or still happening, whether, you know, you choose to subscribe to a different pathway or not. And it focuses on leveraging technology for the sake of interconnectedness, for the sake of collective problem solving, solving wicked problems. And, you know, for example, we're here in community in relation to an initiative called the Permanent Forum for People of African Descent. And we're all from the civil society doing our respective ministries. And what it is a collective of individuals as part of the African diaspora, which is the sixth region of the African continent, and helping to mobilize, you know, disenfranchised populations from the slave trade. And that's all of the slave trades, not just the transatlantic slave trade. But, you know, I think the element there is the community. The element there is using technology to mobilize for collective problem solving and for the sake of coming together to provide a solution. And so if you take that back into, you know, our local economies and how we are on the global world stage and how we can influence our local economy, it's important to still have that meta-level view of how we can still not only contribute to the development of our local communities, but where is the money coming from to be able to do that, right? For example, in our conversations, a lot of time what we're talking about is reparations and receiving, you know, funding to help repair broken infrastructure, broken society, broken community, broken, a lot of broken things. But also there is this opportunity to leverage wealth from being able to have a business that has very low, low stakes, potentially low stakes, and also a low cost for being able to generate income for your family, but also remembering to take that money and then build that bridge and help to spread that wealth. So the reason why I think it's important from not only the fact that we need to be active participants in the world economy through these digital technology, but I'll give you an example of something called, the name escapes me now, but developing economies in, say, rural India, and even on the African continent, there are initiatives to help provide remote working opportunities for people in these areas to help bring money into their economy, to help bring money to, say, rural women who wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to leave their area and go and find a job and work. And, you know, these, the language that we use a lot of the time is called outsourcing, and how companies outsource into these least developed countries or in these, you know, economies that don't require as much money to have remote workers coming in. And I don't think that people are astute to the fact that not only are jobs shifting away from the United States because the cost of living is so exorbitant in so many different places. For example, I'm calling it from New York, and it's very expensive here, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a race to keep up rather than, you know, being able to have a quality of life that we think about. And so we're often distracted by social media and all these other things. And I could keep going, I know, but I will yield there so we can get the conversation going. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You said a lot. We're going to unpack. Dr. Wings, back to you. As I was listening to Dr. Thomas talking, one of the things she mentioned, and you talked about this, and you wrote a paper, which I think is interesting. You submitted to the UN, called African-American-Owned Insurance Companies, A Case Study of Economic Triumph and Economic Tragedy. As she was talking, Dr. Thomas, she talked about reinvestment into the community. And then she talked about reinvestment to the communities here in America. But also underneath that, she talked about investment in the communities in Mother Africa. You mentioned in your work, you talk about the black insurance companies, and you mentioned it earlier, how they reinvested, which I think is something that is missing. And even though you're talking about insurance companies, black insurance companies of the past, is very much applicable to the now and what could be the future. Can you speak to that power? And she was just mentioning it, and you mentioned your work about this lack of not being aware of the reinvestment power, the potentiality of that. Dr. Williams.
Oh, yes, reinvestment. You know, we hear, you know, the whole notion about, you know, the circulating dollar and how at various points in time, a dollar spent in the African-American community circulated several times in that community, whereas today, you know, it takes a proverbial one-way trip outside of the community as soon as people in the community earn it. And again, one of the sadly fascinating things in terms of my research is that, you know, I also look at African-American consumerism, because, again, when you talk about business and entrepreneurship, you know, you have to have a market that these individuals sell or, you know, derive their goods and services for. And one of the sad realities when we look at the African-American community from an economic standpoint is that in 1969, there was this classic book written called The $30 Billion Negro, which the title reflected the collective spending power of African-Americans at that particular moment in time. We know today collective African-American spending power has exceeded more than $1 trillion. If you look at many urban African-American enclaves in this country, you could tell by looking at the surroundings that African-Americans have, in fact, enhanced their collective spending power.
Dr. Williams, that makes no sense. Please tell us, what are we looking at? Why is that?
Well, again, and this is a fairly complex conversation, but it's an important conversation. And again, it goes back to one of the themes of my research in looking at the impact of racial desegregation on African-American-owned business. Because I would argue, in fact, I've argued this in my book, Desegregating the Dollar, that, in fact, the biggest beneficiary of the Civil Rights Act of 1954 were, in fact, white-owned businesses in this country. After that particular piece of legislation, that allowed them, you know, unfettered access to African-American consumers.
Woo, that's deep. That's deep. I never even realized. Oh, my goodness. Continue. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Go ahead.
And conversely, African-American companies, like African-American insurance companies, were not able to, in fact, expand beyond their traditional clientele of black consumers. Because, again, something else that I talk about in my research that...
Dr. Williams, can I pause you for a minute? What you just said, I've never have heard that. You said that in the integration that occurred, that the white companies were the biggest beneficiaries of that movement, where it's always been narrated that the black community was supposed to be the beneficiaries. Can you unpack that some more? I've never heard anyone articulate like that.
Well, when we look at, you know, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that gave, you know, black folks sort of unrestricted access to various, you know, economic and other facilities in this country. So because we know before the 1960s, you know, African-Americans could not spend money in certain hotels, certain restaurants, and certain other public facilities. After 1964, African-Americans had the right to spend their money all over the place. And quite frankly, it became a novelty in the African-American community to be able to say, well, yeah, I can, you know, we could have events at the Hilton downtown. We could do restaurants. Again, in a very real sense, and I don't think hyperbole or overstatement, we were played.
That's what I was just about to say. You took the words out of my mouth. We got played. Oh, my goodness.
And again, I just want to stress the point that the desegregation, the economic desegregation that took place from the 1960s onward was a one-way desegregation, whereas white-owned businesses were able to get more access to black consumers. Black companies were not able to get more access to white consumers. And that was one of the things that ultimately contributed to the decline and disappearance of black insurance companies. After the 60s, they had to contend with more white companies selling insurance and more competition, whereas, you know, turnabout African-Americans could not do that in the insurance industry. They could not go out into the larger society and sell their policies, even though, in fact, they hired and trained white agents to do so.
Dr. Wings, I want to pull you in just a little bit. As I listen to you, and Dr. Tom, this is just, y'all told us it's going to be the diaspora. I told us it's going to be a fire conversation today. Wow, we so blessed. But y'all saying so much, the information. What you think, Brother Rich, as you listen to this high level, I feel like I'm on the world stage. This conversation, we got these powerhouses, these brains speaking to us about information and just black insurance company. I had no idea of that, but I think what's coming out of this, and I think we missed the boat, is how we are our own marketplace. And we have allowed everyone, I mean, to feed, eat off of it. It ravaged Mama Africa. Brother Richard, what's your thoughts as you listen to that? We always bring our engineer because he's businessman too. We like shaking our heads. Go ahead.
I just, like you said, when you was talking, Brother Williams was articulating that point.
Yes.
He was like, I never heard it that way. And it's a lot of our people. We're in a day and age where information is so available to us.
Yes.
But we still lack the understanding of the information that's out there. So a lot of times what you don't know can hurt you. Because we lack the knowledge and the information and know-how to get ourselves in position to win.
Yes.
So when you talk about the money situation and how, you know, we got taken advantage of because we don't understand what's going on. I look at other industries where the white man, if we're talking about, is capitalizing off our people. Because when you think about, we were talking about this the other day, like a lot of our I'm just going to speak from the entertainment perspective. A lot of our black young men and women want to be entertainers. They want to entertain. But what we don't understand is that a lot of these entertainers get taken advantage of by white-owned media companies.
That's right.
And a lot of also another fact is that when you speak about insurance, a lot of these labels, white-owned media companies, have insurance policies on the artists, artists.
That's so deep.
So they rapping about killing
because they understand the power of insurance.
But not just that, but they rapping about killing.
Yeah,
they rapping about murder.
Yeah,
they getting killed or they going to jail for killing.
And they have insurance policies. That's deep. I didn't even know that.
So who's capitalizing off of our young, talented black men and women as well?
And you know, as you speak and listening to you, Dr. Thomas and Dr. Williams, you're talking about a group, Europeans, technically called in America, call them white people, who have just, this group has built their empire. And it's a saying, they said the British Empire one time, the sun never set on the empire. That's how vast it was across the world. And we see where the way you all talking, to think that this group has actually built this generational wealth. This is in a book called The Other Half Has Never Been Told by a white historian. He released it about a few years ago, but it's called The Other Half Has Never Been Told. And he speaks about how the slave, not just institution was built, but all the many different products and marketplaces, as I call it, the black lands. And all the labor that has been grown and has given them generational wealth. I want to ask this one question to both of y'all, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go into, I want to hear you all's thoughts about this whole reparations movement. What do you think it means? Where is it headed? But back to you, Dr. Thomas, when Dr. Wings was talking about this market and marketplace, and basically just we got played. Woo, we got played. Oh my goodness. Dr. Thomas, as you looking at the landscape, the marketplace that's available, that we are the marketplace, what was it that we're missing out on? What's the products that we can be tapping into and we're totally unaware? Dr. Thomas.
Thanks for that. I think one of the really key mindset shifts is the way we talk about products, and going back to that, you know, idea of tech unicorns.
Mm.
And I'm going somewhere with it. So just trek with me for a second, because, you know, it seems like I'm going way off into the distance, but
mm-mm.
You've got companies that have mobilized the power of collectivism for the sake of making a dollar. So Airbnb is an example. Mm. Uber is an example.
Yes.
Where it gave individuals the opportunity to make money. And all they did was create the infrastructure that allowed people to promote themselves through entrepreneurship.
Mm.
So the same applies for, you know, Facebook and for Instagram, which is owned by, you know, Meta. All of it, you know, is intertwined. There are these opportunities for individuals to make money. They have, in essence, created the infrastructure for people to be competitive, to become influencers, to gain sponsorship.
Mm.
How are they so valuable as companies? Who's mm-hmm. paying for it? Well, we are the product.
Mm.
We're the product.
Woo.
Right? And so that goes back to the conversation about, you know, people who are interested in being entertainers and media.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, even participating on these media platforms, people sometimes are just doing it for fun, but, you know, you can also leverage that for your own personal well-being and gain and generate income. So those discussions need to be had. But I think in response to what this looks like for us in a community and concerns, you know, and not being told things and not knowing is, you know, number one, how to use that, how to make a dollar out of your knowledge, because content is currency, right?
Mm.
And that's why there are all these different systems in place for you to make money off of it. And people are doing it. They'll take your knowledge mm-hmm. and then sell it for $99 a pop, you know, and make a dollar off of it. But before I get too far off track, the point, though, is how do we do this in a way that mm-hmm. actually helps to build us up?
Yeah.
Can we be systematic in our approach? Because this is happening no matter what. In fact, you know, we talk about algorithms and what that looks like in a technology space. There is such a thing called, I know.
Brother Richie over here shaking his head. He about to pop. He is the owner of Man Radio. He is about to explode. We about to explode. We mad. We upset. Give us our damn reparations. We want the marketplace. We own this country. Our ancestors. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
There is such a thing about algorithmic bias.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, algorithmic bias is an example of how we're not being told. So our reality is shaped by the information that we have accessible to us. And there is research and information that shows that, you know, the information you receive, the ads that you see, are all personalized based on the back-end data that these large corporations have on you, which data mining and making money off of us as products.
Let me, right? I'm going to pull
but
you
you'll
in.
You'll never have the...
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull you in.
Thank you.
It's all relevant, though. You're talking in books. And then we're going to Dr. Weems. He's talking in books. This man got so many books. Dr. Weems, as we listen to Dr. Thomas... we trying to get just a little bit right out of what she's saying. But when she talks about the marketplace, and this is so interesting, and you talked about this when we spoke, she's talking about how money is made off of collectivism, which is so true. You got Airbnb, you got the Uber, and these folks are made instant entrepreneurs. And not just entrepreneurs, they made instant millionaires, some of them, right? We talking about trillionaires now, people. Dr. Williams, in your research, and as we talked, you talked about this integration fever, right? You was talking about the novelty and basically how the European structure, white folks, they capitalize after off of our need to be a part of the club. And we did that in a unified fashion. We gave our money, took it outside of our own community, and gave it to a totally different group. It's blowing my mind. I can't even finish my words. Dr. Williams, please come in.
Yeah, again, there's so many nuances to this. Just to share an example of just how, wow, I'm searching for the correct term.
Everybody's searching for the words this morning.
You can just come up with your own descriptive adjective. When we look at the growth of the insurance industry in the United States, and that includes both black and white companies, for a significant part of the early 20th century, many white insurance companies either did not insure black people at all, or in fact, they charged us higher premiums than they charged their white customers. For a variety of reasons, white companies began to change their policies for black consumers during the 50s. And among others, they, and this is very similar to what happened in terms of the industry of baseball, where we saw Major League Baseball recruit the top players from the old Negro League. A lot of the large companies like Metropolitan Life and Prudential recruit the top agents from black companies to sell, you know, Prudential, Metropolitan Life policies. But it's even more interesting in that literally we saw companies like MetLife and Prudential being able to profit from past discrimination. But black people knew before the 1950s that they could not get an equitable policy from a major, you know, insurance company. But from this moment on, saw African-Americans, you know, literally it became a novelty and became a status symbol in the black community to be able to say, well, now I have the same policy that MetLife and Prudential are selling to white customers. So, again, it was a very interesting level of psychological manipulation.
That's right.
To, among other things, the decline and disappearance of black-owned companies, because collectively we began to focus on, quote-unquote, these new opportunities that now white companies were, you know, actively seeking our business. That context, we began to devalue the black companies that had served us very well when white companies literally didn't want anything to do with us.
Folks, if you're tuning in, if you're just joining us across the diaspora, today's show, powerful, powerful show. We got to have these folks back. I already decided. Today's show is After Reparations, Economic Models for Community Nation Building for the Future. They are speaking both a particular specific language of economy, economics, technology, collectivism, self-determination. They may seem that they're talking different languages, but they are not. It may seem that they are different eras, but they are not. Remember, with African people, African culture, past, present, future converges. We are creating our story right now. But at the same time, as Dr. Thomas said earlier, we talk about the future, but it is now. It is now, and we have got to get on time. This is what is being revealed. Folks, we're going to take just a little mini break just to kind of, so all this information that we just got, feel like I'm in graduate school. We're going to, again, we're going to allow it to sell. We're going to take just a quick break, quick musical break, and we're going to come back to our guests, Dr. Thomas and Dr. Robert Weems, and we're going to get their perspective, their analysis on this whole reparations movement, this narrative, how their work intersects. But what does it really mean for us? Not just reparations, but after. Say we do get monies. Say we do get these different types of ways of packaging. What do we do with those monies? Do we invest it? you know, what do we do with these currencies? We're going to talk to them about that. So we're going to take a quick break with Wuju Bonten. Give me a minute, folks. We'll be right back.
I feel things as one, I are. Just stay blessing us. You want one of them, yeah? Respect, all right? Feel things are so last, yeah.
We are going to make it, win the prize and take it, take it. We are going to make it, four corner, global. We are strive and a reach for the goal. Them a fight and a spy through them in control. Them a real asshole. But a long time, we a fight for your slice of the bread. Them a scream and a dream and a wish me fi dead. But I got up with head. And not just now, we a scream and a chill for the team. Them a plan out fi bench we and them rule supreme. Like a them one fi clean. Well imagine, we a try move out of the shock. Them a cry and a spy and a try stop we clock. Guess how we off we back. Tell them so we bless. Tell them we bless, tell them we bless, tell them we bless. Tell them we bless, tell them we bless, tell them we bless. Tell them so we still have life, we no stress. God light shine on we ain't got no walk with.
Hey folks, we are back after 500 as Wuju Bonten. Bless, we are blessed. We have a fabulous show today, folks. We're talking about after reparations, economic models for nation building. A very important conversation. Our two folks, Dr. Weems, and we have Dr. Andrea Thomas. They're talking about economy, but also economic models, talking about just a landscape that's often been removed, that's not, we're now allowed to go into this knowledge sphere of people of African descent, just historically for centuries across the globe and in this country we call America. We're going to go back to our guest. I want to go into, we said so much. I want to go back into our conversation, Dr. Weems, you were speaking, and Dr. Thomas, but when we talk about the reparations movement, I find there's a lot that's missing from the conversation, the dialogue, how you all speak. And that's what drew me. When I heard you all speak, I was invited to a meeting just a month ago, and you're the only one that was talking the way you were talking now. And I'm like, okay, that's what's missing. Can you speak to that, Dr. Thomas and Dr. Williams? Why is this type of economic language, the after, why is that missing, you think, from the conversation of reparations?
I think the historical analysis of reparations and the emotions attached to the discussion on reparations have served a little bit as a distraction in our community dialogue. It is important discussion, but you know, we talk about the historical element of it to serve where we are today, to continue to build for the future. And so I think there, especially in the communities that we've been able to be a part of more recently as part of the global collective, you know, there has been the statements being made about the demands of what should happen politically speaking. But in the meantime, there is still this need to connect, you know, the past and understanding our history like Sankofa to be present and to then to continue to build off in a way where we're going in the future. You know, like what I'm talking about is currently happening and has been happening for as long as, you know, we've had this interconnectedness through platforms such as Facebook and even Amazon, right? Think about that. That's a tech unicorn, right? So we're talking 20 something years in the making. And until we start getting right about how to participate in the digital economies to scale, we're still going to continue to have that lag economically because we're not thinking about how we can leverage the present moment and then continue to serve each other with those dollars that come from the present moment, right? This has already been designed, right? It's already here in front of our faces. And to that point, connecting it, you know, with Dr. Weems and insurance companies, you know, right before the break, we started touching on algorithmic bias. If State Farm is the only, you know, I'm using this only as an example, right? Okay, forgive me, State Farm. But, you know, if State Farm appears in your algorithm, you're only going to get information about State Farm and State Farm type agencies. Whereas if there's a high, you know, a higher level, more quality assurance, you know, or quality assured insurance company that, you know, other people are getting access to, you'll never know about it because it doesn't align with back-end data that exists, right? So it matters, you know, in terms of, you know, this historical analysis of why there has, you know, been this disconnect, so to speak, in our communities and with insurance companies, as an example, to, you know, the information that we receive in current day and what we have access to just through what tech biases provide.
Dr. Wayne, same question. Dr. Thomas said a lot, and I thought it was interesting, just the last example she just gave as far as algorithms. If you only are given that information, is the only thing you see, that's the only thing you know. So it is within the system of white supremacy, we have been operating, what comes out of this conversation, with blinders on. We have not been able to see beyond, and we haven't been given the information to see beyond. Same question, what is missing from these conversations, these dialogues on reparations? Dr. Weems.
Well, in fact, I was very pleased that, you know, the title of today's show is After Reparations. That literally represents, you know, the most important dynamic of this. You all, I just may remember several years ago now, Dave Chappelle did this comedic skit related to reparations, and again, it was comedy, but it, among other things, we saw Cadillac stock go through the roof, which, again, insinuated that much of this money, in fact, on consumer items. But again, when we talk about reparation, and again, based upon, you know, the research I've done on consumerism, a lot of the items that we have focused on have been items that really don't appreciate. You know, cars don't appreciate. You know, they in fact depreciate when you drive them off the lot. Indeed, if we're talking about making reparations.
Dr. Williams, I'm going to interrupt you right quick. Dr. Williams, for some reason, your phone keeps going in and out. Are you on speakerphone?
Okay, I'm. Can you hear me better now?
Okay. You can't be on speakerphone because your phone was going out. Okay, so, all right. So we're going to pick back up. Okay, so Richard, we're going to splice that part. Okay, so Dr. Williams, continue. You were saying about cars. Go ahead, Dr. Williams.
Yeah, in fact, you know, cars are not appreciating items. You know, when you drive them off of the lot, they depreciate. Because, you know, the bottom line when we talk about, you know, economics is building wealth. And when you look at items that produce wealth, you know, they're far different from items that don't produce wealth. And indeed, we have unfortunately been focused on items. Again, we're going back to algorithms and how we've been conditioned through the mass media, you know, to focus on purchasing some things or thinking about some things and not thinking about other things. And when we talk about, and again, just going back to insurance companies as an example and going back to after reparations, unfortunately, African Americans let this very powerful industry pretty much disappear. But that has nothing to do with a flaw in that business model. I think it has to do with just how our mindset became warped in terms of its importance. So we're talking about after reparations. Indeed, insurance companies could be a useful way to funnel some of that capital into creating an economic instruments that would continue to create and expand that capital. And I just want to expand upon something that Dr. Thomas talked about in terms of the fourth industrial revolution. On one level, interestingly enough, people on the African continent are perhaps going to be better situated to benefit from that inevitable reality than people, African Americans in this country. We know right now that there is, in fact, a crackdown on the cryptocurrency industry in this country right now as we speak. And there have been a lot of African Americans since the advent of cryptocurrency who have seen this as an alternative viable way to, in fact, generate wealth. And as we have access to that being restricted, and quite frankly, we talk about the war on cryptocurrency in this country is based upon the fact that it poses a distinct threat to the existing financial order, you know, the banks and financial system. And obviously, they're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that cryptocurrencies and the fourth industrial revolution does not really come to fruition unless they somehow can take control of it. Conversely, when we look at other parts of the world, and Africa in particular, that in fact have been victims of, you know, the American economic-based, global-based system, you know, we've seen these places literally embrace cryptocurrencies. And in a very real sense, you know, we're going to see the script being flipped in terms of the economic order of the world, where we're going to see, you know, the African continent, based upon their embrace of this new technology, you know, rising in terms of economic prominence. And conversely, we're going to see the United States decline into a second-rate society because, again, the technology genie is out of the bottle. You can't put it back in the bottle.
That's right.
And those areas of the world that have embraced this new technology, they're going to profit from it, and that includes, you know, Africa and other parts of the African diaspora. Because literally, we look at the world right now, the U.S. is an outlier in terms of its attitude about the fourth industrial revolution and cryptocurrency. So again, we talk about after reparations, clearly, you know, embracing, you know, the digital economy is going to be a major part of that.
Woo, Dr. Weems. Woo, you about to make me cry. Woo, y'all, I told you it's going to be, the walls is on fire, y'all. Okay, we just letting them, we just going to let them burn. We just going to, oh my goodness. Wow, wow. Embracing the technology. Bro, Rich, you had thought, oh my goodness. And the one who embraces is the one that's going to get the wealth. The one that walks, that leans in is the one that's gonna get it. And y'all here in America, y'all not all right. you are not all right. And as he mentioned, I think Dr. Gerald Horn mentioned that, we had him on year before last. He said at one time Africa needed us here in America. He said now it's the other way around. And we see that coming out of the dialogue today. Brother Richard.
Just going back to the conversation about reparations, I feel like this is a good conversation, but I feel like our mindset has to be shifted. We have to unlearn and relearn everything we've been taught. From school to everything,
the media, throw it in like the trash, said, and burn it.
The mass media has programmed our brain cells. So, like with reparations, you getting all this money, but do you have a plan? If you have money with no plan, it's gonna be your own demise. And I and I'm a young adult, and I can only judge based off of what I see from the young black men and women that I see. Everybody just want to have a good time. They want to go out every weekend, spend their money, you know, drink alcohol.
And who
just
they spend
fun.
Their money with? Who they give the money to?
To the club owners. To the
who do not look like them. Or if they look like them, the one that own it don't look like them.
And that's what I'm saying. And Dr. Williams brought up a good point about assets and liabilities, and he talked about cars and how they are depreciating assets. And like our people just need to understand financial literacy. Like we are so beat up mentally. And our whole perspective of what we should and should not do is based off of what we see in the media and what we look at on social media.
Yes.
And a lot of times I'll be, like for me, I have my own business.
Yes. Y'all listen to the owner of Ham Radio. Okay.
But it took me.
He is building an empire.
But I'm not above myself to say that I didn't go and seek out a mentor and somebody show me how to go online and fill out the paperwork and get my EIN number and all of that. Our people don't even understand that basic concept. It's like Dr. Williams talked about insurance. It's so many different lanes that we can get into just within our own families that can create generational wealth. But our minds are so distracted by the world. We're inside the matrix mentally to the point where, like you said, we're giving our wealth to the other races. We're not keeping it within our own communities. And that's going to be our own destruction right there.
Ooh. Dr. Thomas, Dr. Williams, any response, comments on Brother Richard's thoughts? A lot going on, y'all.
Oh, I'm over here snapping.
She's snapping. She's snapping.
Amen, brother.
Dr. Williams said amen. Go ahead, y'all. Go ahead. Responses, thoughts.
I'm so grateful to hear you chime in and to share that perspective. And all the words that kept coming to me were neuroplasticity and being, you know, an environmental outcome, right? These discussions, this dialogue itself could be a multi-season podcast on its own right. Because
She already in my head. Go ahead.
You know, to the point of you're, you know, owner of Hand Radio.
look. He's like, let's do it. See, they are embracing. You hear that, Dr. Wings? We are embracing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I want to respond to something that Richard said.
Yeah.
And I mentioned one of the books I've worked on relates to, you know, African-American development of the African-American consumer market. And, mm-hmm. and one of the things that probably the most disturbing thing I found in that research, and this goes back to the notion of how we have been played in terms of how we're treated in the marketplace, is that we know that the American consumer society, among other things, is based upon seeking status. You know, you buy certain things in order to get quote-unquote status, and if you aren't able to get certain things, that creates quote-unquote status anxiety. As early as the 1940s, corporate marketers knew that people of African descent in this country have an especially acute case of status anxiety because we were the only group
Come on now, bring it.
And when we, in fact, engage in what some might call conspicuous spending, we in fact subconsciously or subliminally think that we are separating ourselves from our slave past.
Come on now.
Which explains why we're, you know, interested in only top of the line liquor or top of the line this or this label or that label. Again, that's linked with how we've been or being psychologically manipulated by corporate marketers. Because as I tell people all the time, some of the most skilled psychologists and psychiatrists don't work at colleges and universities. They work for Madison Avenue, you know, developing ad programs to, in fact, manipulate people. And they know what buttons to push to, you know, get us to
do what they want us to do. Dr. Williams, you is hurting me. You is hurting me. You is hurting us. Oh, my God. Woo. Speak it. Speak it.
That's why you have to fast. You have to.
Oh my goodness.
You have to fast from everything. You have to fast from what you're looking at on TV. You have to fast your diet. It's not just your diet, but what you're seeing, what you're putting inside of your brain. You have to fast from that, and that's what's really keeping us distracted. It's a distraction. We're distracted. We have all the information in front of us, but like you said, they have these big corporations. They can reach our minds quicker. Like you said, the algorithm, what we search, everything we do is already online. So that's why supporting and buying black and supporting black people is so important, because those big corporations, they can reach you quick. The small mom and pop businesses and stuff like that, they're not going to get to your brother, your sister, your cousins right away. And it's going to take time for them to really understand who you are and what your business means to the community.
So that's interesting. So you introduced time. Dr. Williams, your response is, Richard is saying, just the mass reach. Dr. Thomas, you're saying the same thing. I mean, these people are able to mass reach within seconds. So where does that leave the mom and pop stores? Dr. Williams, where does that leave the entrepreneur? I'm interested now. So this is a question that's coming up. Dr. Williams, what's your response?
Well, this is a very difficult time, especially for small African-American businessmen, because some have argued that, you know, COVID-19, among other things, has resulted in the accelerated disappearance
of smaller
black-owned businesses. And we've seen an increased consolidation of sort of the retail markets with, you know, large conglomerates, you know, the Amazons, the Walmarts. And what have you. So, the small mom and pop African American enterprise is an endangered species at this point. And even some not quite so small African American enterprises are endangered species, because again, going back to algorithms and marketing,
they lack the technology too.
As a consumer base, you know, it's good to patronize black businesses, it's good to you know, support your own, you know, we get in fact far different messages, but this comes back to the question of, you know, owning the media. So someone like Brother Richard and what he's doing, you know, that's an important remedy to, you know, the problems that we are dealing with collectively right now.
Dr. Thomas, back to you. When Richard, you saying so much. I told y'all we was gonna be in deep waters. Don't worry, y'all. We got you. You is not gonna drown, okay? Dr. Weems, you had mentioned about. I'm sorry, Dr. Thomas, you had mentioned about. You mentioned COVID, and I don't think we really. I think it's gonna be decades before we rush. Just really what COVID has done, as far as speeding up, accelerating. Wow. Go ahead, Dr. Thomas.
All of this has been designed. And there is even indication as early as 1998 where there were predictions about educational infrastructure. And as Dr. Weems is talking about large conglomerate businesses, it's the same applies for educational institutions. And it is really a mind training exercise. But I don't know that it's coming from a place of evil. I think it really is coming from a place of disenfranchisement and lack of knowledge, because there's so much opportunity there.
Yes.
You know, and I think earlier, you know, there was a mention about having to fast and detox. And that's true, because neuroplasticity is real. It's the elasticity of the mind in what we believe, and it's influenced by what we're continuously, the stimuli we're continuously putting into us, right? So on social media, and being mindful about what you sign up for and what you